You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. He does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right-end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your We're Going to a National Championship edition. Plus, we have a head coach now. Plus, National Signing Day. Plus, a little bit of a basketball check-in. Lots to get to today. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, we got a lot of things to talk about. We got all the time in the world, but we still got a lot to get to. But so how are things for you today?
I'm great. But yeah, I mean, this is a jam-packed situation. So let's just roll right now.
All right, so let's get into the news part. We touched on it a little bit last week. I believe that news came out that Tanner Volson named the top offensive lineman in the FCS, Ross. But feels like every single year we're doing one of these, and here we are talking about offensive linemen, the top awards in the country, and NDSU being among them.
Yeah, year after year, it seems like NDSU's undervalued, but because of like the Bison fatigue aspect of things. But this is an incredible award. I mean, this is not the top. You know, he already won the Remington Award as the top center in the country. This is not that. He's the top offensive lineman in the FCS. So people are paying attention to just what a quality player Tanner is. And it's a tremendous honor for him. And hopefully something that, you know, leads to an opportunity in a camp and a chance to play on Sundays.
Well, the other big news, I'm not sure if you're listening to this, if you've been hiding under a rock or where you've been, but NDSU has a new head football coach. He's a very familiar name, Mr. Matt Entz. We'll get into it here in a minute. But just off the top of the head, Ross, what are your initial thoughts? You've talked about it a lot on social media already, but for those folks who haven't seen your Twitter feed or don't want to scroll through it, what's your initial thoughts on Matt Entz being named the head coach?
Right. So obviously, you know, normally we would have led the show with this, but if you don't know that Matt's the head coach, I would like to know what cross-reference of people it is that would download and listen to this podcast, but don't know, but don't know that Matt's the head coach yet. I think they nailed it. And I actually told the athletics director, Matt Larson, that I said, I know you don't care what I think, but I think you nailed it. And he was nice enough to lie and tell me that he did appreciate my opinion. Anyway, Matt, I think, is just a home run hire. They've had defensive head coaches, Bob Babich, Craig Bull, Chris Kleiman. This is a guy that understands the system of defense that was brought here, the four down too high, as he put it in his press conference. And he understands the culture now. He's been here since Kleiman, you know, got here. There are guys on the staff that have been here even longer than that. And so if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And this is an excellent job of making sure that it continues on at the success rate that they have had. And it's not, you know, just because he is the existing coach that makes the most sense. He is the existing coach that makes the most sense, but it's still a good hire, I think.
And so let's get into the final thing before we talk a little bit more about Matt Entz, and that is All-Americans. Here we are, another undefeated Bison football season. A lot more All-Americans headlined by a couple of sophomores and one on the offensive line and one of the linebacking core, Ross.
Yeah. Again, sophomore All-Americans, Dylan Radins, Jabril Cox. They had a number of other All-Americans on the, you know, the regular team. I believe Menard, I think. Do you have the list in front of you? It was Menard, obviously. Easton was in there. Volson was an All-American as well. Grimsley was an All-American. Am I missing somebody?
I'm pulling it up here as we speak.
This is just absolutely fantastic radio, I'm sure.
This is what the folks come to this podcast for, Ross, is they want to hear elite NDSU football takes. But you look at the six hero under our hero All-Americans, Easton Stick, Tanner Volson, Jabril Cox, Zach Johnson,
Leonard,
and Robbie Grimsley. Three on the first team in Stick, Volson, and Cox, two on the, or three on the second team in Zach Johnson, Greg Menard, and Robbie Grimes.
The Hero Sports, Under Armour, Champ Sports, Hawaii Bowl, All Americans. Let's go. But yeah, so congratulations to those kids as well. Just, you know, more and more honors as we start to hopefully kind of historically grasp the fact that, you know, this is really something special this season, this group, this team, this 2018 group of kids, and they belong in any conversation that you put them in. That's for sure.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Matt Entz being named the next head football coach here at the North Dakota State University. He's the 31st head coach in the program's history. He's in his fifth season under Chris Klieman, or was under Chris Klieman as the defensive coordinator, linebackers coach. He was named the head coach last Thursday. Ross, you've been on top of this from the beginning, from the moment that word got out that Chris Klieman's going to go to Kansas State. Your top guy was Matt Entz, and it appears that North Dakota State followed your advice, and now Matt Entz is the guy that's going to lead this program going forward. So you talk generally. Why don't you get into a little bit more specifics about why you thought that Matt Entz was going to be the guy, and what do you think that him being the next coach kind of does for the trajectory of this program going forward?
Well, so the reasons I thought were they continue with defensive coaches. Matt is ready. You know, he's been a coach for over 20 years. He was a defensive coordinator here for five. He's just ready, and he's the right age, too, where, you know, and there may come a day, too, where someone like Kansas State, not obviously Kansas State, but someone comes a-calling for Matt Entz. But he's the right age where he could also be your coach for a decade, and you'd be very happy with that decision. I think he brings an energy and an even keel because, you know, I know and I love Tim Polasek. I do. And I know that was a popular name. But Tim's a fiery guy. And I think there's a decent chance at some point in his coaching career he's going to be a head coach. But he's a little extra, is Coach Polasek. And so I think the smart thing, or the you know, more of a even keel type of thing, was to just have Coach Entz you know, be the next head coach, and he's an excellent X's and O's guy. He's an excellent teacher. Like I said, this made the most sense, but it's also not just happening because it made the most sense. In my opinion, it's happening because Matt's the right hire.
So as he's the right hire, I mean, recruiting impact, I guess, Matt handled the Twin Cities. Now he's going to be the head football coach. I mean, do you think that NDSU can continue to recruit as well as they were under Chris Klieman with Matt Entz? And how do you think that this kind of impacts things in recruiting? I know that, again, I'm more traditionally the recruiting guy, but you have a much better handle on what you think folks in Fargo are going to believe with this program under Matt Entz.
Right. So, and I actually asked him that straight up at the signing day press conference. I asked, are you going to pass that off? And he said he was. And so, you know, the traditional role of a recruiter is a closer, and that is what Matt will be. And so they are going to need to find somebody or switch somebody that they currently have to that Twin Cities area, because Matt's not going to be, you know, the guy that runs down to the cities and recruits kids constantly. He's got the whole program to worry about now. Plus, they have to replace Hank Jacobs. And Hank, you know, I give a ton of credit to Hank. And I know some people are pissed at him because he started following some Kansas State people and kind of let the cat out of the bag about Klieman going to Manhattan and so on and so forth, and pretty immediately, you know, throwing on that purple and getting on that jet and going down there. But when you sign three of the five highest rated recruits of all time, when you bring in 4 3 stars for the first time in school history, this is a recruiting brand and a recruiting footprint that has widened not only geographically, but in the caliber of kids that will even pick up the phone. And so it's incredible. Honestly, it is what they've done to raise, you know, where the bottom line is for North Dakota State recruiting, the kids that they're capable of getting on the phone and getting on campus and getting committed and then, of course, getting to sign. So there are shoes to fill. Matt has to fill his own shoes as a very excellent Twin Cities recruiter. I mean, Phoenix Sproles all the way down to Robbie Grimsley. These are guys that Matt was involved in recruiting. And he's going to continue to need these Twin Cities kids that don't quite get that Minnesota full ride. And that is going to be a continuation of the lifeblood of this program. So there are big shoes to fill, but you know, I say it a number of times on this show. When North Dakota State screws something up, then I'll have something to go off of. But until then, just assume that they're going to do the right thing.
Final question for you before we move on to something a little bit different. What do you think, is he going to have the Mike Zimmer type of head coach slash defensive coordinator role? Obviously, he was and still is the defensive coordinator for your North Dakota State Bison. Do you think that's going to be his role here going into 2019, or do you think that they'll have a different defensive coordinator and Matt will still call the plays?
No, Matt's not going to call the plays. That's another thing that I asked him directly. Actually, that wasn't at the signing day press conference. That was when he was announced. I said, are you still going to want to call the defense? Because there are, you know, Mike Zimmer does it. There are plenty of head coaches that were defensive guys that don't want to release that control. And he's like, no, I need to release that control. So I think, you know, there's a chance. I would doubt it, though. That the guy that he brings in to replace himself as the linebackers coach is also the DC. In my opinion, depending on now, of course, if anybody goes to Manhattan with Chris, my opinion is that between Gazer and Klanderman, they're probably going to have one of those two guys take over the defense because they're tenured guys that have been here for a long time. They understand the defense in and out. They probably are in line for a potential promotion, and that also allows them to stay with the position group that they've already been with. Coach Williams is a great coach, Buddha, but I mean, he's only been here the 1 year. It would be very interesting to see him just promoted to defensive coordinator over guys that have been here that long. A lot of people pointing at Grant Olson, who was an All-American linebacker, another Twin Cities kid, is the linebackers coach for Kurt Mallory out in Indiana State, Bison legend, likely one day a Bison Hall of Famer, and somebody whose wife is on the LPGA Tour, but I would guess would prefer to live closer to her home in Oxford, North Dakota, than out in Terre Haute, Indiana. There are plenty of rumors and plenty of steam flying around for a Grant Olson reunion, but Gio is a guy that I don't think has the experience that you would look for to immediately just come in and call the defense instead of coaches, honestly, that were here when he was a player.
All right, so that's going to do it for this Matt Entz discussion. Before we talk a little bit of basketball, Ross, why don't we get a word from our sponsor?
Dreaming of being faster, stronger, and more confident? Let the professionals at Dynasty Performance Training morph your body into dominating the competition. Their proven workouts will correct your form, hit your goals, reduce injuries, and enhance your life. And the team at Dynasty Performance Training will be with you every step, every lift, and every sprint on your way there. Visit DynastyPerformanceTraining.com and research the experts today for athletes, for adults, for teams, for you.
All right, let's check in with some hoops.
So when you look at, since we've talked last, there's actually been a lot of basketball games since we talked last. There's been three, including a home victory. What we talked about last week, Ross, had a very important home game. NDSU was able to get it done, a 74-67 win over Missouri State. Then they headed out 2 days later to Missoula, Montana, to take on a Montana squad. They lost by seven. And then last night on National Signing Day, NDSU comes home to play Northland College and wins by a billion. So we talked about this big game in terms of being at home. You have Missouri State. It's a pretty good, a pretty good team coming to Fargo. NDSU is able to get it done, and a lot of it was on the shoulders of their point guard, Vinny Shaheed.
Yeah, Vinny played really well. In fact, Vinny's kind of coming into his own. Poor kid barely even has a backup to speak of. You know, they'll let Jordan Horn run the point, but Vin's in the Kai Cabela's situation, and the Kai Cabela's situation used to be called the Lawrence Alexander situation of you know, the point guard just needing to play all the freaking minutes in the world. But he's doing an excellent job. He really is. He's picking his spots, and that's important. I think Vin is a guy against certain opponents, certain levels of opponents. He could go down and get his shot almost any time he wants and, you know, shoot a decent percentage. But then you're going to get guys, you know, uninterested in the rest of the game. So he's getting his teammates involved when it makes sense. He's taking it himself when it makes sense. He's really doing an excellent job of just facilitating the offense, and frankly, he's kind of headlining the defense and making sure that the opposing team's point guard is taken care of as well. But yeah, he was a big deal in that Missouri State win, no question.
All right, so then you have a couple days later, NDSU heads to Missoula. They're actually winning at halftime and what looks like a football score, 23-19, but then Montana gets hot from the three-point line in the second half. Again, a game you'd like to have on the road, but a close loss for North Dakota State nonetheless.
Yeah, that would have been a monster turn of events, frankly. If I think they came out of the break, and I believe Vinny hits a hits a layup, and they extend to six. And when it was six, even though it was just the beginning of the second half, you started a little bit to believe. And that would have been just such a big boost to this team to go out. Montana, I think, is the defending Big Sky champs, picked first in the league, to go out and get a road win against the top team in a league that I think is not quite at the Summit League's level, but it's close as far as being a mid-major. I think the Big Sky has a claim that, you know, they're in the realm of the Summit, and to go out and get a road win would have been absolutely huge. You know, instead of being 5-8 right now, they'd be 6-7. They'd be right in the mix of, you know, potentially turning the season around. And not that they can't ultimately achieve everything that they want to, because they can, but it would have been a big victory, especially coming off the Missouri State victory, to get the Montana victory, come home, beat up on Northland, and move into the conference season really feeling pretty good about themselves.
Well, if they weren't after Missoula, they're probably feeling okay about themselves after a 90-43 victory, in which I think essentially 9-10 different guys got 20 minutes last night, headlined by Rocky Cruiser with 16-3, and then Dengu is able to go 16-13. Again, you're playing Northland College or North Dakota State. You should win by this much, especially with conference play coming up here, Ross. At least they're able to get right back on track.
Yeah, and it was always going to be a get-right game, but there's guys that needed to get right. Jarius Cook needed to get right. The Jackson Notek needed to get experience, even if it was against that level of a team. Just because the final score is so lopsided, it doesn't mean guys weren't getting valuable minutes, and that the defense and the switching that they do wasn't getting valuable burn, and the offenses that they were trying to run, and guys developing chemistry with each other. Because you got to remember, this is a team without two of its top eight guys. You know, Griesel and Cam Hunter are eventually going to come back, and they have to juggle a bunch of different lineups and a bunch of different parts of the rotation. These guys are young, and they need to learn how to play with each other so that they can get ready for this Summit League slate, because South Dakota State's a little bit up and down. I think they're still pretty clearly the favorite, but boy, the league looks wide open after that.
So if you do want to check out North Dakota State here as they enter conference play, you're going to have to wait until next week, where I believe they open at home on the 28th against South Dakota. So before we start to talk a little about South Dakota State, that FCS semifinal at home that was so electric, Ross, do you want to give the folks a little preview of who our interviewee is?
Yeah, I have a chance to speak to Zeb Noland, the transfer quarterback from Iowa State. Zeb comes in with 2 years left to play, and I think is immediately going to be thrust into a very entertaining quarterback competition. We'll talk to Zeb right now. Here with former Iowa State and current NDSU transfer quarterback Zeb Noland. Zeb, how are you?
I'm great. It's been an exciting time. It's been a long process, but it's an exciting time in life. And, you know, I've had a really good pass at Iowa State, and I'm ready to put that behind me and move forward to my next journey.
So if you don't mind, just kind of explain what your experience was at Iowa State. So how you came to the decision to transfer, and kind of even the initial, because you're not a local kid, that is for darn sure. So how did you end up in Iowa, and what led to the decision to no longer be a Cyclone?
Right. Well, was recruited by Coach Campbell at Toledo, and when he got the job at Iowa State, he called me and said, I want to offer you to be a spot here at Iowa State. So I took an official visit, and I loved it, and I committed there. You know, I spent 3 years there. I tore my ACL my first year, came back after that, strong as ever. Played a little bit last year, and then this year, our first game against SDSU got canceled, so then played Iowa and the starter got hurt, so then it was my turn, and you know, we had some ups and downs. We lost to Oklahoma by 10, beat Akron, and you know, things were good. Coach felt like there just needed to be a change. Not that I wasn't doing my job or playing good, it was just that he felt that we need to figure out something new to see if we could spark something new in the offense. And you know, I want to be a better teammate than player on the field sometimes. So I was like, you know what, just do what's best. And it was he said it was a hard decision for him. And, you know, I stayed on until Kyle got healthy, because I was going to give the team everything I had. And I went and talked to Coach. And I just said, Coach, I think I'm going to transfer. And he said, you know, I understand. And he also said, I think it's a good thing that you're coming to me now where you can go through a recruit process and not be crunched for time at the end of January or at the end of December at a bowl game and trying to find a place to go in January, or I would have had to sit out a semester because I wouldn't have had anywhere to go if I had decided later. So that's really how it went. The recruit process up there, once I told Coach I want to leave, he sent me down. A couple days later, I went in, and he's like, hey, I know a couple of guys. Are there any schools in mind you have? I was like, well, heck, why would I not try to strive for North Dakota State? They're the best in the country. And he had talked to Coach Kleiman at different events and got to know him, so he called him. And there's some old former ties through Coach Messingham, so I got the pleasure of talking to him and started to build a relationship, and the rest is history.
So I got to kind of ask you, because Matt kind of poked, Coach Entz kind of poked fun at us, because the secret meeting that you took to Fargo or the secret visit that you were on, none of us people that are paid to know things knew anything. And he thought that he was pretty darn pleased with himself that nobody picked up on that. So kind of describe your secret journey to Fargo.
Well, I talked to Coach Kleiman about taking a visit. He said, you know, I want you to come up after you go on all your other visits, and then you can compare and contrast. So that's what I did. And he's like, no, I don't want you to let anybody know that. Well, I had not even talked to anybody at Iowa State once they had seen I wasn't playing at the Texas Tech game. So they had no clue where I was going. The only guys that knew were a couple of my teammates, my family and girlfriend, and just very few people knew. And it's funny, I was in the stands at the game, and this guy turned around and asked where I was from. I told him I was from Georgia. He said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm on a visit up here to play quarterback, but I never specified where I was from or what year I was. So, I was on the field. I mean, any of you guys could have saw me before the game. We were out to eat in town, but I didn't put anything out on Twitter until they did. So, it's about how it went.
That makes a ton of sense. So you're a player now pretty far removed from your high school career, and with a couple of games at Iowa State, but not a huge depth or breadth of you know, stuff for people to watch to kind of get to know Zeb's game. So what would you say? NDSU, of course, just had a kid. He'd probably get a shot at the next level. Who was extremely athletic, ran around, threw it around. I mean, how would you describe your game? Is anybody even in the league maybe that you model yourself after a little bit or would compare your style of play to?
What was unfortunate at Iowa State is I didn't get to run as much as I wanted to just because we were so limited on numbers at quarterback. You got to play really conservative when there's only one or two behind you. Actually, at Baylor last year for my very first start in the Big 12, there was nobody behind me, which is unfortunate. So I guess anybody could get the gist of why it was not the smartest to just run around and try to make play, if you get what I'm saying, because...
Yeah, the ball's got to come out quick if there's no backup.
Yeah, there's no chance for error there. And, you know, I don't know who I would exactly model it as. I looked up to Carson Wentz, obviously. I mean, he's a great player that came out of there. You know, I just say I'm a good pro-style quarterback. Did it in high school. That's all I ever did. I enjoyed the offense at Iowa State and being a part of it. But, you know, under some circumstances, you just got to be careful and play smart. That way you give your team the best chance to win. And that's what I try. Honestly, I wouldn't say that I mold anybody. I just want to do what it takes to win a football game, whether that's running, throwing, defense scoring, whatever it may take. That's really the way I play.
Did you have a chance to meet the other quarterbacks that'll be in the room when you of course are actually part of a team?
I have not. I got to talk to. I actually had breakfast with Easton and the safety that converted, or Hendricks. I had breakfast with those guys. They're phenomenal men, and you know, I haven't got a chance to meet those guys, but I'm looking forward to it just because. That's someone I spend the majority of my time with. Quarterback room at Iowa State was special to me because Brock kind of took him under my wing like a little brother and taught him the ropes just because I loved who he was as a person. And Kyle and I were close because, like I said, after the Texas game last year, it was just Kyle and I on the team. That's all there was. So we had no choice but to become friends. But we love each other, and that's what I hope to carry up there is, you know, lifelong friendships, not an enemy-based quarterback room, but, you know, good friends that get along and pull for each other and compete well against each other because competition makes everybody better.
Yeah, it's an interesting room because only one of you can play at the time. It's not like the receiver room or the corner room. I get it. So, you know, starting jobs are obviously not handed out on official visits. What has the staff told you about kind of the status of competition? Are you, you know, coming in here with expectations? Are you coming in here with no expectations and ready to compete? What was kind of the conversation about the level? Because it is a lack of experience. I mean, there's not a lot of kids that will be in that room with you that have played a ton of snaps.
Right. They actually just said, you know, it's a great opportunity. We want you to be a part of this team, Alan, for your experience and leadership, but your maturity, because I am older than those guys. And they thought, you know, that it would be a good fit for the program. I said, you're not promised or guaranteed anything, but the only thing you will be promised is a fair opportunity for an open competition. And that's the way I'd want it to be. I wouldn't want to go to a place where you're promised something and you got to live up to all those expectations and some, because they're giving you the job. You're not earning it. And I don't think you would be able to earn the respect of your teammates and your, you know, the fans if you didn't go in there and work extremely hard to gain that respect. So that's what I appreciated most from them, because they made it clear you have a good opportunity here. It's fair, open competition. You got to come here and make your legacy known. So that's what I was looking for in a program, with someone like that.
Now, do you intend on traveling down to the national championship game, and then when are you planning on arriving in Fargo, whether you're going to that game or not?
Well, I'm actually going to be moving in the 4th when they're at the national championship game up there. So I'm sure I'll watch it on TV and be there when those coaches get back. I'm sure the guys will want to go home and see their families or do whatever they've got to do. But, yeah, I mean, I wish I could make it down to the game and see the atmosphere in Frisco. I'm sure it's fun and electric. I've heard nothing but good things about how North Dakota State fan base travels. That says a lot about a program and how much those fans love the players. So I'm sure it'll be awesome, and hopefully I can get a chance to watch it while moving in.
All right, man, last question.
All righty.
Is Zeb short for anything?
It is. So my real name is Zebuli Aiden Nolan, so I go by Zeb.
Well, all right.
It sure is. Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, congrats again. We'll talk to you later.
Sir. All right, Merry Christmas.
All All right, we'd like to thank Zeb for his time, certainly. Let's chat about the game, the biggest game in Fargo Dome history, as we coined it before they kicked it off.
Well, it didn't disappoint as NDSU is able to take over there in the second half, 14-7 in halftime, and things really get going in the second half. And then where we have to start is Matt Entz's defense being able to stifle Taryn Christian, 10 of 26 for 180 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. But anytime that you are in a negative game script like that, you're going to have to complete passes, and completing 40% of your passes on the road at the Fargo Dome isn't frankly going to get it done. And I think that's a big credit to this defense, Ross.
Yeah, it was for sure. You got knocked around a little bit. I've mentioned before, and actually you'll see after film review come up tomorrow, because we don't have a game to preview. We have, how much time until the national championship game. We're kind of trying to spread out a few things and didn't want to step on signing day, of course. But, right. There was a potential for some head injury stuff, or at least it looked that way.
I was about to say, there's about three different times in watching that game where he gets popped, his head snaps back, hits the turf. He comes out for maybe a play, goes back in, and then for those of us at home that were watching the game, they're able to pan to him on the sidelines with the camera on it. And if I've ever seen a glazed look in my eye from someone, that was the look that Taryn Christian had. Yet South Dakota State kept putting him back in the game, Ross.
Yeah, and so like the thing is, of course, that's an incredibly serious accusation, right? So
it is. I mean, it is. But yeah. In that same respect, you saw how vicious these hits were. You saw how hard his head was hitting the turf,
yeah.
Snapping back. Again, the concussion protocol, and he has to be cleared by the team doctor, an independent neurologist. But he just didn't look right to me. Again, it is a serious accusation, but some of the hits he was taking, I don't know how you're able to put him back in the game so soon.
So anyway, that's kind of all we'll talk about on that, I think. But the Bison offense sure looked unstoppable.
They did. Anytime you're able to run for another 439 yards, five touchdowns, Easton Stick 12 of 15 for 169 yards as well. Anytime you're able to put up essentially 600 yards of total offense, I think you're doing something right. And when you put up 608 yards of total offense, 44 points, you're probably going to win a lot of football games, Ross.
And they're just so dominant up front. I mean, this offensive line group has gelled and improved and matured just immensely. And I just can't tell you how impressive they've been. Volson and the tackles have been pretty good all year. Zach Johnson, is in his normal spot. Volson's in his normal spot. Raidens was always a good left tackle. But Colin Connor has really taken to playing guard and is doing it at a high level. And it's nice to see Luke Bacon really just settle in on one position and compete at a high level. And Cordell Volson is kind of the sixth guy. That's going to be big because that kid's going to have to start next year. And if you have him doing what he's doing now, which is, contributing game in, game out, you instead of next year having to replace the entire interior offensive line and only bringing back two starters, to be, of course, the two tackles, you're kind of bringing back three starters. And you're doing what you did this year, which is kind of training two guys in.
And when you look at this rushing offense, I mentioned it, 438 net rushing yards on the day, only two carries for Seth Wilson, but one of those was that long 78-yarder where he just couldn't quite get into the end zone. But here we are talking about essentially a third/fourth, maybe even fifth string running back. When he's getting touches, Seth Wilson is making plays, Ross, especially, and that's so important because there's a little bit of RB injuries going on right now.
Yeah, he's really impressive. Seth is. I think he's got every chance in the world to be the lead back next season. I know Ty Brooks, has had probably a little bit more on-the-field success than him, but Ty is not a gadget player, but he is a very specific kind of player, just from a size standpoint and a burst standpoint, and somebody that I don't think as a team you want him carrying the ball 23, 24, 26 times. So as a change of pace back, as a kind of a lethal weapon, Brooks makes a lot more sense, where Wilson has the frame, I think, to be more of your John Crockett type, more of your Samuel Ogiri type. And so I think there's a real chance that Seth, taking the more unconventional way of playing as a true freshman and then redshirting in his second year, taking advantage of this new four-game rule, you're going to have 3 years potentially of Seth Wilson as a feature back in the offense. You might, you know, that might put in danger some rushing records. We'll just see how we'll see how things go.
Well, it's so important because Lance Dunn doesn't play in this game, battling injury. I mean, anytime you can have Seth Wilson go 2 for 86, Bruce Anderson 9 for 79, Adam Cofield 6 for 77, Ty Brooks. I mean, you got four different running backs that come in, and this offense is still humming, putting up 40 plus points, and you're rushing for over 400 yards. I think it's just trying to say, you know, we have a bunch of talented running backs. As talented as Lance Dunn is, there are ample guys being able to ready at the ready to be next man up mentality. And that's a credit to this North Dakota State coaching staff with their recruiting efforts.
Yeah, it really is. And it's incredibly impressive. Part of the credit certainly has to go to the offensive line that I already mentioned. There are a lot of holes that a lot of backs could have gone through. And that's not to say NDSU doesn't have talented backs, because they definitely do. But the offensive line deserves a ton of credit. The offense as a whole, just as a unit, though, I think is just so impressive, because there aren't many schools, frankly, that could just lose a Lance Dunn and keep on trucking like nothing happened. He is one of the better tailbacks in the entire country.
He certainly is. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the defensive side of the ball. We talked about coming into this game how Kay Johnson had been a huge big play threat for South Dakota State. I believe the stat coming into this game was that he had a touchdown on one out of four catches. He had 64 catches, 16 touchdowns coming into this game. And for the most part, before garbage time, Ross, NDSU did a pretty good job of keeping Kay Johnson in front of them.
Yeah. The touchdown was maybe the most impressive throw I've seen in person by an opposing quarterback this season. That thing, I put it out there. That was some something from Taryn Christian. Wow. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, like I said, until basically the competitor, anytime you're down 21 against NDSU, I don't really care who you are, the game's over. So when they're down 21, when that happened, during the competitive balance, it was really only two catches for 30-some yards from Kate Johnson. And then, you know, once NDSU went up 21 in the second half, the game was over and caught the bomb. Still only three catches. The bomb, very impressive. But when you've got a guy like Kate Johnson, who is without question a focal point of their offense, and you pretty much take him out of the game during the competitive portion of the game, I think you have to certainly give kudos to Coach Entz. And you have to give kudos to the back seven at North Dakota State, because it was a team effort to keep him bottled up, and it was a successful one at that.
And an individual effort that we really haven't talked about yet. I don't know how we got this far into the show without talking about QB1, but I mean, he was the guy when he needed to be the guy. This is your FCS, in my opinion, best player, you know, the player of the year, 12 of 15 through the year, 169 yards. A touchdown, but on the ground, 16 for 147 and three scores. He did it with his legs. He did it with his arm, both at key times. And if you're going to win a national championship, you need your quarterback likely to be a big part of that. And Easton shined when the lights were bright as Ross.
Yeah, they should just send the tape of that game to all the Walter Payton voters, because
I think so.
That was that unquestionably was the deal, man. I mean, that was everything that you could want from a quarterback in one game. He threw it well. He ran it well. He got them into the right checks. He led. He was, you know, and of course, we don't know what happened with Christian. But even, let's say he was completely healthy and South Dakota State staff did nothing wrong. If you transpose those two kids' performances, and I get that Easton wasn't going up against the Bison defense, and that's a completely different thing. But he was so much the better quarterback and the frankly the best player on the field. Coach Klieman, after the game, told ESPN, Easton Stick's the best player in college football. I don't know if I'm going to go there, but
that's a head coach who's very confident in QB1. That's what that is, man.
Well, and he was certainly pleased with what he just saw on the field as well.
You can't blame him.
Right, yeah. Right. And so, but I mean, you know, it's not as far off as people might think. The kid is an unbelievable athlete, is an unbelievable runner of the football. I'd love to have people go back, you know, when he was a freshman filling in for Carson Wentz and watch what they did offensively They simplified everything. And the guy was basically like a wing T quarterback. He dominated those games, you know, and now they're letting him throw it, and he's doing it at a high level, high AYA. Completion percentage not maybe where you want it, except in this game where his completion percentage was where you want it. He was dominant, and he's the best player in the subdivision. And I hope he wins the Walter Payton, because I think he absolutely deserves it. If you trade Easton Stick for Devlin Hodges, NDSU, I think, gets markedly worse. And that should be kind of the marker for, in my opinion, the most outstanding player. Because it's not the most outstanding stats. It's the most outstanding player. Most outstanding player is Easton Stick.
Have we talked about, I believe, that Easton Stick's going to be heading to the Shrine game?
No, we haven't. And that is a disappointment, frankly. As somebody who...
We'd like to see him
at the Senior Bowl. Yeah, that's the appropriate place for Easton. There are 8 senior quarterbacks in this class, and people know, you know, I do draft evaluation stuff professionally. If there are 8 better senior, not, you know, you can't count the underclassmen because they can't go. If there are 8 better senior quarterbacks in the country than Easton Stick, I would love to see him. And I tell you what, they're not all in Mobile. I think it's a misevaluation. I think eventually his NFL career will bear that out. But I'm not going to grind that axe right now.
we can talk about that one later. The final thing that I kind of want to ask you about is, we talked about it in the preview. You know, was that actually the championship game? Because you look at Eastern Washington, NDSU down in Frisco. NDSU is already a 14-point favorite. I believe that was the same spread coming into this game, but it's a much different style of team. I would imagine NDSU is going to have to be – it's going to be bet up from 14 from there. But in your opinion, I mean, was that the title game right there?
Yes.
it's hard to argue just guys, because the style
– But guys, please listen to our preview shows.
Yeah, it's just hard to argue with the style of play. Again, we'll get into that next week or the week before there as we get a little bit closer. But now it's time to transition to the recruiting part of the podcast. Ross, before we get into it, you have an interview with the number one all-time rated NDSU signee, the linebacker from Illinois, Mr. Luke Wirtz.
Yeah, I had a great conversation with Luke. A lot of yes sirs. And if you knew me a little bit better, I don't think you'd be showing me so much respect. But I really appreciated Luke and him giving, you know, on a day like that, because he did. The interview that we did was on signing day. And so for him to give us 5-10 minutes of his time, I think just kind of shows you the kind of kid that he is. And I think Bison fans should be really excited about him as a player and as a person. Here with North Dakota State signee Luke Wirtz. Luke, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I screwed that up, right? It's Wirtz, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Wirtz.
Okay. So I want to take you back to the beginning a little bit and just kind of how does a kid from Illinois, because, you know, NDSU's natural footprint would be more the Dakotas, Minnesota, maybe leaking into Wisconsin. There's plenty of you know, Division I options in Illinois. So how does a kid like you find out about North Dakota State?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of funny. My dad went out there on a work-related trip. He works for John Deere, so he's in the Waterloo area pretty frequently. And, you know, he went out there, and when he came home, he had a shirt that was, I think it was 4-time national championship. And, you know, that's how I really got to know the Bison. I think Carson Wentz was big at that time, so... You know, his name was popping off, and I saw it in the media and everything. So that was really my first recognition with the Bison.
Let's move beyond that, I guess, and kind of into when you first actually started recruiting or being recruited, of course. Who reached out to you, and kind of how did that process start? And then did you have a chance to camp at North Dakota State?
Yeah, so it first started out where Klannerman came to my school. I think it was sometime in the spring, and he came out, and we had a good talk and talked about coming up for a visit. And then I think he came a few more times to the school and showed up as well somewhere in that time. And, you know, I got a visit out there in the spring as well, but I did not go to any of the camps, no.
So how excited are you that the linebackers coach is now going to be the head man.
Oh, I'm thrilled. He's the perfect guy for the job. And I know I've had a great relationship with him. I built it up for this time, and I'm super excited for Coach Enns.
There had to have been at least some contact with Coach Kleiman, and it's no mystery that you were also, frankly, offered a scholarship by the previous staff at Kansas State. So yes, was there any temptation to at least check into what might be, you know, going on at Kansas State when the head coach that you committed to was moving there?
No, yeah, I didn't really have any temptation with that. I've been committed since June to NDSU, and, you know, obviously Coach Kleiman had a great opportunity to go and be a head coach for a Power 5 school, and he's the perfect guy for the job. I'm super happy for him, and, you know, the fact that Coach Enns filled this spot, I just feel, you know, super confident about him making the right decisions going forward.
Have you had kind of a leadership role or in this class, or, you know, I mean, it's insane the way that today allows, you know, recruiting classes to stick together or to get to know one each other. How often do the kids in your class chat? And like I said, is there any kind of a leadership role that you've taken since you've been committed for so long?
Yeah, so I started up the Twitter group chat and the Snapchat group chat and got all the guys talking and, you know, added the guys along, whoever committed, and, you know, we just stuck as a group, and I know we had a bunch of the guys sign, a majority of them, and, you know, I want to be the best leader that I can for this class and, you know, do a great job moving forward.
So I want to talk about the transition a little bit. How did the group chats react? How did the coaching staff kind of reassure you guys or reach out to you guys and make sure that everybody knew that, you know, the tradition was going to continue and that everybody was going to be okay? Take us through kind of that 24-hour period, because it wasn't a ton of time, frankly, between, you know, Kleiman being named the head man, Enns being named the replacement, and then, you know, you guys were needing to make decisions whether or not this was still going to be what you wanted to do.
Yeah, no, most definitely. So when Kleiman first left, you know, when he got the head coach job at Kansas State, never find out, it was obviously a little bit of a whirlwind. You know, it was a shock to everyone. We, you know, we're kind of, you know, just in shock, I guess. But once Enns was the head coach, announced the head coach, and, you know, we all trusted that North Coast State was going to make a great decision on who they made their head coach. And I know Enns is the perfect guy for the job. So after that was secured, we were all really confident in North Coast State. You know, the football program, the culture is not going to change. That's what the coaches were telling us all throughout. You know, Coach Kleinerman called me and was texting me, and same with Coach Enns. They're just talking about how the culture is not going to change, and I truly do believe that.
So let's talk about kind of your situation specifically. I want to ask you two questions about, or really touch on two topics of, like, were these contributing factors or was it something else? Number one being the legacy of linebackers at NDSU. Joe Mays, NFL. Ramon Humber, NFL. Chris Board, Nick DeLuca, Kyle Emanuel, current NFL. And, you know, if you're paying a little bit of attention, you'd notice that two starters at linebacker are graduating and on their way out. So did the legacy of linebacker at NDSU affect you at all? Did the depth chart at NDSU affect your decision at all?
Yes, sir. So the legacy is obviously an incredible thing, you know. The fact that they have so many NFL linebackers, you don't see that many places. And I want to be able to fill those shoes as best I can. As far as the depth chart goes, I just want to make a difference wherever I can on the field, whether it be special teams, whether it be defense. I want to be a difference maker and help let this team win more championships.
How are you going to take in the national championship game in Frisco, Texas?
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait to watch it. I'm not going to be able to go down there, but I'll definitely be watching it on TV. And, you know, to see the sea of green and yellow and green gold that's going to be in the stands, it's going to be absolutely amazing.
All right, Luke, any last message for Bison Nation?
Yeah, you know, I can't wait to come down and get to work with, you know, all the guys that I've gotten to know on my official visit. And our recruiting class is going to be really special. You know, I truly believe that. And I can't wait to, you know, see the community in Fargo and get used to it down there. So go Bison.
All right, Luke, we'll see you when you get on campus.
Yes, sir. Sounds great.
All right, we want to thank Luke one more time for his time yesterday. It was a huge day for him. And like we said, for him to take the time out of his day to come and talk to us was pretty darn cool. We hope that you guys, the fans, really enjoyed that.
And so when you look at this North Dakota State recruiting class that just signed yesterday, 25 signed, 20 of them, I believe, are going to be on scholarship. And I guess we have to talk about the quarterback position first. There's always got to be a little bit of drama around National Signing Day. Didn't quite go as we thought with a longtime North Dakota State quarterback commit going and following Chris Klieman to Kansas State, and then a transfer coming in from Iowa State and Zeb Nolan. You already heard him earlier in this podcast. Just quarterback dominoes are never easy, Ross, but it certainly got very interesting Tuesday night and throughout Wednesday.
Yeah, we can just address this now. Here's what I understand. There were two – and the way – let's back up. The way that Klieman's contract is written, he was unable to speak to any North Dakota State recruits committed to the university before, you know, to bring them along to the next job. The only way out of that is the contract is written – is if the recruit contacts him first, which basically...
So very tricky verbiage there.
Yeah, very tricky verbiage. And frankly, from a legal perspective and just from a common sense perspective, basically makes the rule unenforceable. At the same time, Klieman's not here to screw over NDSU. He's not here to, blow this recruiting class up and leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth. He loves North Dakota State University. He, you know, I think he cares about his legacy at North Dakota State University. With that said, I know, or I don't know, but I heard from multiple sources that Kansas State was in conversations with two of NDSU's committed kids. One of them chose to stay committed and sign his national letter of intent with North Dakota State, and one did not. And the one that did not was Jaren Lewis, and that was the class's quarterback. But I will say this. I understand the sale. Recruiting is selling, and I understand the sales pitch. Chris Klieman, if he was contacted first by Jaren Lewis, and I have absolutely no reason to believe that he wasn't, could very simply say, you can go to Fargo and likely sit behind Trey Lance for 4 years, or you can come here to Kansas State, play Big 12 football, play Oklahoma, play Texas, play here at Kansas State in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Our quarterback's a junior. He's going to be gone either this year or next year, and you're going to have the opportunity to start 3 years instead of one in the Big 12 instead of in the Valley. And that's not disrespectful to NDSU. In fact, I was surprised they were able to get a quarterback of his talent level the year after they recruited Lance. Because if you remember, the year after they recruited Easton, they got James Hendricks, who has turned out to be a fantastic football player at North Dakota State. Don't get me wrong. But his only other offer was really the University of Minnesota Duluth, and he didn't even stick at the quarterback position. Usually after the year you get a stud QB, that's used against you in recruiting, and you don't get another stud QB until the next class or even the next class after that. You see it with Justin Fields leaving Georgia, knowing that, you know, he's not going to play. So I understand why Jaren Lewis did what he did. From what we understand at Bison Report, it still does not sit particularly well with NDSU's current staff.
I mean, you can't blame them for that, considering they had him committed for so many months, and then potentially within 24 hours of signing day, they learned that he's going to go to K-State, and you can just kind of leave him out to dry. But again, this isn't personal, it's just business, both on the recruit side of things, on the NDSU side of things. So,
and it 100% happened within 24 hours of signing day,
which again, that's why the timing sucks for North Dakota State. And so they're able to bring in Zeb Nolan, and I think that gets us into the kind of a quick conversation, Ross, about, you look at this quarterback position now. Easton's going to be gone after Frisco, and so now where we have Holden Hotchkiss, we have Trey Lance, and now Zeb Nolan. And again, Zeb's coming in here going to compete, thinking he's going to be the starter. But if I was a betting man, of which I know we both are, I still think that Trey Lance has to be considered the potential favorite going into spring ball. But what say you?
Well, I think Zeb knows that nothing's handed out in a meeting room, you know.
Correct.
They're not going to say, hey, come to North Dakota State and we're going to guarantee you a starting spot. That's not how North Dakota State works. They don't guarantee anybody a starting spot. from Desmond Cain on down, these transfers coming in, we're never guaranteed anything but a chance to compete. And that's, I think, what Zeb has here is a chance to compete. The other thing, and Ant's pointing this out, you've got Easton Stick, he's gone. His backup was a year older than him, and Hendricks recruited, to be the quarterback of the next class. Well, he's going to be your starting safety next year. The quarterback after that, Henry Van Dellen, dismissed from the team. The two quarterbacks after that are what you have, Holden Hotchkiss and Noah Sanders, one of them being a walk-on. And then finally, of course, you get to Trey Lance, the kid who's been tabbed, as the future of the program. But if you don't bring in a Zeb Noland, you have a redshirt freshman and two redshirt sophomores, one of whom being a walk-on, and that's your entire quarterback group. And this is without a high school quarterback now because Jaren Lewis is going to Kansas State. So there's not even a true freshman you could turn to, in any kind of an emergency situation. So I think, there's a chance, and I actually asked Coach Hinch this as well, that they add a high school quarterback. Is he going to be the level of Jaren Lewis? No. I think that's going to be difficult to find. Jaren was a three-star kid. I think the only other three-star kid they've ever brought in was Easton Stick, if Easton was even that. I don't know. I know Easton had a big...
Back in the day, I can't recall back all the way back then, but I can tell you things weren't, as, in my opinion, as accurate as they were now.
Sure. So, yeah, and the reason I guessed he might be a three-star is because he did have a full ride opportunity in the Big Ten.
Right. Exactly.
It was Rutgers, but
it's still a Big Ten offer,
right? Yeah. Exactly. It's a Big Ten scholarship offer, so that's my guess. And so, I think that you would have been a little young and maybe a little thin, and so this adds experience and it adds depth, and that's what that quarterback room needed. And he'll have every chance in the world to win that job. They are not going to set Trey Lance or Holden Hotchkiss in that. For that matter, in stone and say, well, this is the guy.
All right, so let's move on to the running back position. NDSU signs a running back from Florida. I found it funny when looking at the graphics that NDSU put out. They put him at 5'5". Now, we have him at 5'8", but he's not the world's biggest man, but he may be the fastest member of this class from Tampa Catholic High School down in Tampa, Florida, Jalen Bussey. Again, you're looking at your potential, who's going to be our dynamic returner, who's going to be our dynamic guy, where if we get him the ball in space 5 to 10 times a game down the line, I would have to think Jalen is going to be your kind of Ty Brooks guy when you look forward to that 2020-21 kind of a season. Not every day that you see a Darren Sproles, I guess, type of player get a ton of touches a game, Ross.
That kid is something else. Bussey, I remember when he was up on his official visit, I had a member of his staff tell me that he was the fastest kid that he'd ever seen on film. That is high praise for someone that every single year watches high school tape after high school tape after high school tape, trying to evaluate kids, get them on campus to camp, get them to commit. To say this is the fastest one I've ever seen on film, that's high praise. And I think Jalen is coming in at a great time. The back from last year, Sabian Clark, is basically the Terminator. So if Sabian is your bell cow and Jalen is your change of pace, you're in great shape. Then go back and get another 5'11", 220-pound kid next year. Running backs like that nowadays seem to grow on trees. Let's just go find one. But I think it's not a huge deal that this year's tailback group only includes one, and he's a what I would call a specialty player, a satellite player, because you've got Seth Wilson now, 3 years left. Sabian Clark, they did preserve his red shirt, 4 years left. You can go back and get yourself a bell cow in the class of 2020 and never skip a beat.
And when you look at the wide receiver position here, Ross, two guys that signed, maybe Caden Coons from Dickinson, North Dakota there, can maybe be kind of a utility gadget kind of a guy in terms of he can be running back, he can be slot. Maybe he's out wide. Another guy, not the biggest guy in the world, 5'9", 165 pounds, but a guy at camp that I know you heard as well as I did that this kid lit it up at camp, someone they wanted to make sure that they got in state. And from listening and seeing your tweets from Coach Entz's press conference yesterday, he was one of the guys that they thought was a top three guy in North Dakota. They're able to keep him home, and then they are able to go to one of my favorite places along Lake Michigan in Port Washington, Wisconsin, get a 6'2" wide receiver, 200 pounds, and Jacob Lippi. So two different kind of molds at the wide receiver position that you're able to bring in here, especially Ross, at a wide receiver position that you look forward to 2020 or 2019 at least, is very much wide open for playing time.
Yeah, and I think specifically it's wide open for playing time in the slot. I think Phoenix Sproles has a chance to get some slot time in the kind of the mold of Darius Shepherd, but wide receivers that can play outside are more valuable. And so if Phoenix really can hold up outside, I think that's where you keep him. You can do some matchup problems with him in the slot. But for right now, if you feel like the two guys coming back, and it really is two guys coming back, because Bachmeyer and Kane are gone, Freeman and Shepherd are gone. So the only guys really that have any production whatsoever are Christian Watson and Phoenix Sproles. And it's not much production to speak of, but at least they have live game reps. You know, they've seen the bullets fly. They understand what the deal really is. That slot position, I think, is wide open. I think Trevor Hight has a chance to play there. I think DJ Stewart has a chance to play there. I think they have a number of kids, Victor Kaszewski, that have a chance to be a part of the wide receiver conversation next year. But there is no reason at all that Caden Kuntz could not be a part of the slot receiver conversation. You can't even bring the poor kid's name up without getting a Ryan Smith comparison. But, you know, that's going to happen when you're a North Dakota kid who is short and white. You're going to get the Ryan Smith comparison. That's going to happen every time. But he's an absolute freak track athlete, as Ryan Smith was. And one more Ryan Smith comparison is that kid didn't redshirt either.
All right, so when you look at the tight end room, I think Coach Roll is pretty happy considering he got three more talented tight end bodies there, two from North Dakota, specifically Fargo. Dawson Weisenberger, 6'5", 230 pounds. Jaden Klebo, also 6'5", 205 pounds. And then from Parker's Prairie here in Minnesota, Travis Yonke, a guy that I know that they liked very, very much early on, someone they thought was the top tight end in the state of Minnesota. It's tough for me to argue with that. So you have three more talented tight end bodies, but I wouldn't imagine these guys are going to need to see immediate playing time, Ross, but you're the elite Bison mind. What do you say?
No, not a lot of immediate playing time here. Even if you switch them to defensive end, there are plenty of bodies there. I just thought they got longer as a team with this class and got more athletic. I think there's a chance that, you know, one of these kids ends up on defense. Maybe one of these kids is used in a wide receiver / tight end role, kind of like a Jeff Ilias was. But they just got big, you know. And there's no reason, I think, to rush these kids on the field, because you do have Ben Ellison and you do have the ones that everybody knows, which of course would be you know, Babich and Gindorf. And those are kids that I think we expected a lot from as redshirt freshmen this year, and it didn't really happen. But next year it's going to have to, because Nate Jensen's gone. And so the other tight end in the rotation, you know, they've been using Brock Robbins at tight end, and Brock's not graduating either. But they're going to need something out of Babich and Gindorf next year. That's probably fine. I mean, I think your third year in the program, as Matt Entz has said before, is kind of when things click. So I would be surprised. Plus, these kids need to hang weight to play tight end, and they need to learn a bazillion things. And that's one reason I think why Ben Ellison told me that Noah and Josh weren't getting as many snaps as you would maybe think. It's because you have to know pass pro. You have to know run blocks. You have to know multiple different kinds of run blocks. You have to know your entire route tree. You got to know so many different things and master so many different techniques as a tight end in this offense. That's just tough to make an immediate impact. So, no, I would not anticipate seeing these kids right away.
All right, then we should move down to the offensive line, of where, again, I should mention this, and I've mentioned it a couple times before here, NDSU in this 2019 recruiting class, three of the top five all-time commits come from this 2019 class in terms of in the 24/7 composite era. What is a 24/7 sports composite? You look at the 24/7 rankings, the ESPN.com rankings, and the Rivals.com rankings, mesh them all together, that's the 24/7 composite. So if you think one of the sites is more biased than the other one, well, we try to eliminate the bias with the composite. And the number four all-time signee in this class is Hunter Pontius, a kid from Buffalo, Minnesota. I know the Golden Gophers were very intrigued with him. They wouldn't move it to a scholarship offer. They continued to have it as a preferred walk-on offer. He said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to take my chances up at North Dakota State. Again, I think he is absolutely in the conversation to be a high ceiling kid. If things absolutely click for him down the line, he's a very good hockey player as well. 6'7", all of 6'7", potentially 6'8" now, 270 pounds. Someone that I know NDSU was a big fan of at camp. They also have another big tackle mold guy from Wales, Wisconsin, Kendall Moran High School, Jake Rock, someone that they really liked here during this senior season as he moved from tight end to offensive line, a position he's never played before. Someone that still needs to gain some weight. He's only 260 pounds, he told me as of last week, but they're going to allow him to redshirt there. And then the final offensive lineman, scholarship-wise, that I think we should talk about is a kid from Cambridge, Minnesota. Not every day you get a kid out of Cambridge, Minnesota, not a lot of Division I kids out of there. But I know from speaking with a member of the coaching staff that Brandon Westenberg was the best offensive lineman they had at camp. They were looking through offensive linemen come July after camp, and they were thinking to themselves, well, why don't we just move on Brandon? He was clearly the best one, and then everybody looked at each other. Yeah, we should definitely take him. So you have three offensive linemen there, Ross. Two of them in a little bit different mold from what we're used to, and then you have the Mahler there and Mr. Westberg.
Well, and that's something that Ant said at the press conference was that they were very aggressive over the last year, even the one before that, in getting guys that probably were going to be interior offensive linemen, and it was time to go out and get some tackles. They got Jalen Sundell last year, who I think is going to be a really good tackle here at North Dakota State. But other than that, it was interior offensive line last year, so they went out and identified two tackles and signed them, and Jake Rock and Hunter Pontius. Hunter's a guy that's an unbelievable athlete, is a hockey player. Like Matt said, he's probably 7'2 or 7'3 on skates, so that has to be a pretty terrifying thing for the opponents. But, yeah, Hunter's a kid they're going to hang weight on. They're going to hang weight on Jake Rock, and these guys, fortunately for them, because of NDSU's ability to recruit the offensive line and to retain offensive linemen, they probably aren't going to have to play until they're redshirt sophomores. And so they'll get, you know, the full 2 years of Kramer time and be ready to go after that.
So let's switch to the defensive side of the ball, starting on the defensive line. And I was chuckling to myself a little bit when I heard Coach Entz talk about defensive tackle from Kansas there, St. Thomas Aquinas High School. And Javier Derrick calling him, I believe, a bowling ball. He will be a bowling ball for us on the interior of the defensive line. Then you also have the Mostair twins from Lakeville North. I was able to be at the Lakeville North versus Eden Prairie game. For anybody who knows anything about Minnesota high school football, that was the actual 6A state championship game. Now, I was able to see it in September. And I'll tell you what, Will Mostart, which is going to be the one on scholarship, I mean, he is relentless. He absolutely pestered Eden Prairie's quarterback, who's going to be heading to Minnesota all night. He gave the Eden Prairie offensive line fits the entire game. Someone that was a huge part of that state championship run for Lakeville North. And then you also are able to add Reed Ryan into the mix, someone that we have as the number five all-time commit for North Dakota State, someone who had a host of MAC offers. I believe Ivy League was in there. Every Missouri Valley offer that you want. So we're looking at the rich getting richer here on the defensive line for this North Dakota State team, Ross.
Certainly, and another position group that's going to have time to develop because of what they've been able to retain in front of them. You know, with tons of talent with Tony Pierce and Barty Ogbu coming right after a class that had Wagey, Sunt, and McCormick in it. They're not going to need these defensive ends until they're completely ready to play. And the defensive tackles have Alo Beigler and Lane Tucker, you know, ready to join Karch and Darnell. So they're not going to need these defensive tackles. These kids are going to get Kramerized as well. Derrett's a really fun prospect, somebody that I think will play a little bit of nose and really disrupt some stuff. And the Mostert twins are they are as advertised. Matt even mentioned that one of them will probably play three tech and the other will play, you know, six. And that's what they'll continue on with as far as the career trajectory of those guys. Reed Ryan is something I don't get it. I watch Reed and I don't understand how he's not a Wisconsin Badger.
I was about to say he's kind of the type of guy where he's been to camp so many times at Wisconsin. He's the kind of mold that seemingly always does well at Wisconsin, yet here we are. He signed a national letter of intent. He's coming to North Dakota State. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Paul Chris kind of missed the boat there on that one.
For sure. I just don't. And I think maybe there's a chance he's these too small to play, you know, five tech for them, and maybe not quick enough to play outside linebacker if they're going to continue that 2-4 nickel, 3-4 down, you know, defense that they play, where they have kind of more of the Andrew Van Ginkle type of TJ Watt, Vince Beagle linebacker as opposed to your traditional defensive end. Reed Ryan does seem like a very traditional 4-3 defensive end.
Yeah, he certainly does. And again, I can't really fathom that one, why Reed didn't get more Big Ten attention come signing day, but this happens every year where MAC schools know that they're not going to get the best players that are in their mind a tier below the ones that are going to Big Ten schools, because North Dakota State just comes in and cleans them up. So the next position that maybe we can see some guys contribute right away at is at the linebacker position, where I think NDSU hit a couple of absolute home runs. You look at, we already had Mr. Luke Weirds on the podcast. He is the number one rated all-time commit to come to North Dakota State. Someone that had a Kansas State offer. I know that there was some people a little bit leery when Coach Kleiman took that Kansas State job, because it was North Dakota State versus Kansas State the first time around. North Dakota State's able to hang on to him. You look at a couple of the other guys in this class. Dylan Hendricks, someone that is a very, very good rugby player, 6'3" rugby player. You know that this coaching staff is in on that. Then you have a couple of guys in Luke Dwyer and Nicholas Kubitz that are going to potentially be on the outside linebacker positions. But Ross, you talked about it with Coach Entz yesterday. You have these four linebackers coming in. What do you think that their potential roles could be? And do you think that they could potentially play a role as early as next season?
I do. And that has to do with depth more than anything else. I don't know what we're going to get out of Aaron Mercadal. He had a season-ending injury this year, was a special teams-only, basically, guy before that. Then you lose, of course, Dan Marlette. You lose Levi Jordheim. You're basically down to a situation where you think you have Jackson Brown, Jackson Hankey, and Jabril Cox as your starters, but you don't really know that. And then behind them, who in the world knows what's going on? So I think the Lukes have a legitimate chance of playing early. They say Luke Weirts is a Mike. They say Luke Dwyer is a Will, kind of in the MJ Stumpf mold. I think they both have a chance. Now, they did also have Mitchell Cartes in last year's class that they really like as a scholarship kid. There's all the chance in the world all four of these linebackers redshirt, but there's also a chance that I think two of them play. Kubitz, though, was a victory for the staff. I happen to know that there was another Missouri Valley team on Kubitz very late in the process, trying to get a flip, playing on the Kleiman thing, and they ultimately failed, and he ended up at North Dakota State. So that is a victory for the staff as the last 24 hours of signing day kind of rolled to an end.
All right, so let's finish up with the defensive backs here, potentially before talking about an early enrollee, which you don't see every day at the specialist position, but you have a couple of corners coming in, one from Winona by the name of Terrell Hall, Anthony Coleman as well, coming from Johnston, Iowa. Two guys that picked up their offers at NDSU summer camp, someone that Coach Klanerman was able to work with, see how legit their speed is, see how legit their length is, was able to get them committed shortly after. They never wavered, and they're able to come here to North Dakota State. And then we also have a safety to talk about. I know that, Ross, you really enjoy pronouncing this last name, from Aurora, Illinois. Julian Wilodarczyk, I believe is how you pronounce it. So a couple more, or a few more defensive backs that we're able to add in. What do you think about the prospects of them potentially playing right away?
Yeah, Wilodarczyk is the way that Entz with it, so with a silent W. So Entz went Wilodarczyk. I would assume that he got that straight from Julian, but who in the world knows?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, Julian has a chance to redshirt, I think. You've got Tutsi, and of course Hendricks will come back and play. They really like James Kaiser as a safety prospect. Dawson Weber has been in the university for a while. I think they could use Jaden Price back there if they wanted to. So they have some bodies there, and I think, you know, would probably like to preserve, if they're going to only take one safety in the class, probably preserve his red shirt. Beyond that, though, the corners have a chance, because if they don't get Dom Davis back, they pretty much have the three starters and a bunch of question marks. And those three starters would be Destin Talbert. He'd be your, you know, kind of your nickel. Marquise Bridges, cornerback, and Josh Hayes, cornerback. those would be your three starters in nickel. Beyond that, you got Jaden Price. Like I said, Jaden might end up like Christian Dudzik, might end up like Trey Dempsey, switching to that free safety position. And Trey Fort's a guy, 5'8", Shanley kid from Moorhead. You know, they have inserted him on defense. I don't know how high his ceiling is as a defensive player. Maybe he's somebody that you work in at the nickel if some injuries happen. But in general, the depth at cornerback, I think, is one of the more concerning things. So for them to get two highly sought-after scholarship kids was a big deal. And the other kid that the same Missouri Valley team was after deep into the night before signing day was Terrell Hall. And then the staff secured another victory by maintaining Terrell Hall's commitment despite a really aggressive move forward by another Valley team trying to prey on some perceived weakness from Kleiman's exit.
We don't traditionally talk a ton of specialists on this podcast, but I think it's worth noting that NDSU is going to have a walk-on kicker coming in here in January, as you and I both know. Cam Peterson is going to be playing in his 58th game. He's been kicking for 4 years. He's going to end it out in Frisco, so we're going to be looking at who's going to be the kicker for this Bison team come 2019. Well, we might be having to talk about an Ohio kid by the name of Griffin Crosa.
Yeah, Griffin's brother kicks at Western Illinois. He's already graduated, so he's going to be an early enrollee, and I like that. I mean, I think it makes a ton of sense. Jake Reinholtz is the other kicker on the roster. They're going to have an open competition. Let's start the open competition in spring ball, and that's exactly what they're going to do. I think Griffin has every chance in the world of potentially being NDSU's next kicker for 4 years. That's usually how the Bison have done it, or at least that's the way that it's gone, is that they have had kids kick for four full seasons, and then they just go ahead and find another one. So I think that the early enrollee thing is a smart move by him and his family to give him every opportunity to potentially win that job.
All right, before we round things out for today, I know the question that we're going to be asked, Frost, is, well, do you think North Dakota State is done? Yes, they had 20 guys on scholarship add to the class here, but especially with the new transfer portal that everything is going on with this NCAA transfer portal that's brand new here in the last 6 months, kids going through spring ball and potentially grad transferring out or just transferring out, D1 kids potentially coming down to the FCS level. I think you're going to tell me, I would imagine NDSU is going to be looking for potentially another high school kid or two, and they're going to keep things open on the transfer wire as well.
Yeah, both of those things I think are true. Like I said, I wouldn't be too surprised for them to go after a high school quarterback and at least get one, for this class. Maybe ends up playing another position, so you go after an athletic one. I don't know. But they're also potentially looking at a grad transfer. I mean, he said that. Matt said that. If they're going to maybe try to fill a hole, maybe it's at corner, maybe it's at wide receiver, maybe it's at linebacker, but they might go that route and kind of look for a kid to come in and obviously contribute right away. But I don't think they're done. I think they have two or three more spots to fill, and they'll fill those come late signing period. That would be my prediction.
All right, so I think that's going to round things up for today. Ross, any more before we send people off into this good night?
No, sir. I'm ready to relax for a little bit.
Yeah, you and me both. So we appreciate you guys for checking us out here on the Bison Report Radio Podcast. If you can, please give us a look on the Bison Report. We got in previews, a signing day article up about everything. We'll start to get some Q&As up here with this 2019 class as we get closer and closer to the holidays here. We also want to thank Zeb Nolan, Luke Weirts for coming on the podcast, talking with us. They didn't have to do so we greatly appreciate them. So we will be back next week or potentially the week just before Frisco here to preview what is going to be the national championship game here between North Dakota State and Eastern Washington. But before then, happy holidays, everyone. We thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.